Ayanis.
This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. If there's one thing that's certain after 9/11, it's that life is precious. In the United States, thousands of innocent people died on that fateful day. In Afghanistan, many innocent civilians have died in the U.S.-led bombing that followed. There is no shortage of opinions about how America has responded to the terrorist attacks. In this hour, perhaps the ultimate moral arbiters in the debate speak out. Families of September 11th victims just back from a journey to war-torn Afghanistan. We begin the discussion with a look at civilian casualties in Afghanistan. Carl Canetta is co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives at the Commonwealth Institute. Earlier, I asked him for the latest numbers and what conclusions might be drawn from them.
What we're looking at right now is evidence, strong evidence, of between 1,000 and 1,300 civilian casualties from aerial bombardment. We're also taking a look at civilian casualties that fall into the category of humanitarian crisis and how the bombing campaign impacted on that. There we are suggesting another 3,000 plus. A total figure is in the vicinity of 4,000.
How do you even begin to compile civilian casualty figures in a country as remote and inaccessible as Afghanistan?
Our approach was to take a look at the solid Western sources that do exist on a number of incidents. These are cases where reporters actually went to the scene, saw the carnage, counted the graves, or spoke to people who lost individuals in their families. And then we took those figures and we compared them to the more general press reports that were coming out of Pakistan.
So you're satisfied that you're somewhere in the ballpark. Has the Pentagon released any of its own numbers on civilian casualties?
The Pentagon has not. The British intelligence early on came up with a figure a couple of weeks in to counterpose it to what the Taliban was saying. At that point, the British were estimating 300 casualties, or approximately 100 a week. And there has also been an estimate by Human Rights Watch, who did the estimate for the Kosovo War. They say 1,000 plus.
What do you make of these numbers? 1,000 dead or 4,000, if we accept your additional humanitarian-related deaths? Is this an acceptable level of collateral damage, or do you think there is an acceptable level, or how does it relate to other conflicts?
From my perspective, it's not an acceptable level. For me, the question is, did this war require a bombing campaign? Was this the only way to begin to go after the people who executed the attacks on us on 11 September? And I think the answer is no. That prior to the war, there was a lot of speculation about attempting some sort of police action with a lot of covert operations, much less of an emphasis on bombing. And I think that had we taken that route, you wouldn't have seen this level of civilian casualties.
So at a fundamental level, you were opposed to the bombing campaign. Given that, the Pentagon has described it as a highly targeted campaign. We've seen phrases finely tuned and bullseye war applied to it. Do you agree that that's been achieved here?
In general, since the Gulf War, we've demonstrated a lot more accuracy than was common in wars previous. But if we want to compare this to the Kosovo War, in this case, we used approximately one half as many bombs and missiles, but we produced a rate of casualties that may be twice or more than was the case in Kosovo. That means this was four times less accurate, at least in regard to civilian casualties, than the Kosovo War.
Why would that be?
A variety of reasons. First of all, the weapons mix is different. There's been an insistence that there's a higher percentage of precision weapons being used. I don't think that's borne out by the facts. We will probably end up with a slightly smaller percentage of precision weapons than in the Kosovo. A different mix of precision weapons has been used, and the ones that we are relying on in this war are somewhat less accurate. The percentage of cluster bombs will be greater. And a cluster bomb, though it can be delivered in a relatively precise way, once it arrives at its target, it scatters its munitions over a wide area, and they remain alive for a long period of time.
Carl Canetta, I guess the question is, what military lessons do you draw from these estimates, and what moral lesson do you draw from this picture?
I think that the important thing here is to go back to a sense we had earlier that a greater deal of restraint is needed when we are thinking about how to deal with problems like the Al-Qaeda network. These people do have to be brought to justice. They do have to be interdicted. But there are a range of options between doing nothing and going to a war on the scale that we did. Because now we have, let's say, thousands of people in Afghanistan who consider us the enemy.
What do you make of the overall American public response to news of civilian casualties in Afghanistan? How would you describe it?
I haven't seen figures on how the public has responded. What I have seen is that the Pentagon is very eager to play down the question of civilian casualties. And in that, I think there's a recognition that Americans do care. I don't think there's much interest in this country in going after ordinary Afghanis. I think there is a recognition that ordinary Afghanis have suffered more than we have from the people that we're trying to target.
But the Pentagon is describing the formula that it used in Afghanistan as the new formula for fighting such wars abroad.
I think that's a mistake. To the extent that we are talking about chasing down these terrorist gangs, I think that the way to go is not with large-scale bombing campaigns. We are talking about the expenditure of more than 12,000 bombs and missiles. That seems to me to be a formula that guarantees a fair number of civilian casualties.
Carl Canetta is co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives at the Commonwealth Institute. He spoke to us from Bethesda, Maryland. For families of September 11th victims in America, the terrorist attacks were a direct blow to the soul. They were left behind to pick up the pieces of shattered dreams and rebuild shattered lives. Left to understand how and why this could have happened. For one small group, the search for answers led to the rubble of Afghanistan. United in grief, these strangers came together and flew halfway around the world this month to seek understanding and see for themselves the other side of the 9/11 story. What journeys have you taken since September 11th to help you understand? You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. With us from Stockton, California, is Daryl Bodley. His daughter, Diora, was killed on United Flight 93, which crashed in a field near Pittsburgh. Welcome and good evening, Daryl Bodley.
Hello.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah.
Also with us tonight from Vermont Public Radio is special coverage news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Daryl Bodley, we never know quite what to say to the people we talk to who have suffered the kind of loss you have, except that we respect it and we mourn with you, and we thank you for coming on with us tonight.
I know that, of course, I do that privately, but also the public mourns for my daughter and all the victims of September 11th and for the innocents that we've lost since then.
Yeah. Daryl Bodley, we want to understand the journey that you've recently taken, but before we do that, out of respect for Diora, she was your only daughter. Please tell us about her.
She was 20 years old. She was going to be a junior at Santa Clara University, and she was majoring in psychology. She had, through her school life in high school and then in college also, she had been in service in the Wild Animal Park in San Diego, mm-hmm. Rather the San Diego Zoo, mm-hmm. At animal shelters. She was involved in an AIDS awareness program for teens in San Diego. And then when she was in college, she was working as a teaching aide for a second grade in a little elementary school that was right next to her university there in Santa Clara.
She wasn't supposed to be on Flight 93, was she? How did you come to suspect that she was?
She had a reservation on Flight 91, which left or was supposed to leave about an hour later. And she and her friend, who was driving her to the airport, tried to get there early enough so that she could stand by for Flight 93. And as fate would have it, she got there on time to do that. Mm-hmm. And so she called her boyfriend to tell him that she would be home early.
Mm-hmm. We don't want to take you back through this unnecessarily, but we do want to understand the background to your decision to go to Afghanistan. Describe to us in whatever form you're comfortable with your cycle of anguish and thought and decision-making after Diora's death on that day.
Well, I think I can safely say that as most people might define what being angry is, I wasn't angry. Of course, I mourned and I was sad. And I immediately tried to figure out what my daughter would want me to do and what I should do. I mean, I couldn't change the fact that it happened. And so I had to figure out what I could do to do the right thing. And since the apparent motivation for the terrorists had something to do with religion, I immediately contacted some interfaith groups in Stockton to try and get some kind of understanding there. That's the first thing I did. Mm-hmm. I also felt I had some sort of experience in which I got some direct feeling from my daughter in terms of a piece of music that came to me 2 days afterwards. But mainly, as a result of trying to understand or wanting to understand the circumstances under which such a thing could happen, I wanted to go to Afghanistan, where apparently this thing was born. Mm-hmm. And I also understood that there were people who were in Afghanistan who were not part of the general populace there.
But as I understand it, Daryl Bodley, you wavered a bit ultimately about going to Afghanistan. Why? Who and what convinced you to go there?
Well, I'd say, first of all, I'd say about a month after September 11th, I felt that I wanted to go someday.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some interaction between my stepdaughter Ava and Global Exchange and myself.
Global Exchange is the International Human Rights Organization.
Yes.
It's California-based. It
right.
describes itself as committed to social justice. And they have put out statements saying that while they condemn September 11th, vengeance offers no relief, that to meet violence with violence breeds more rage and more senseless deaths. Were you in tune with that message, or was it just the opportunity to go to the source of the terror network that drew you?
Well, I'd say what I was particularly in tune with was the idea that Global Exchange also was committed to humanitarian relief.
Mm-hmm.
And so that part I was mostly interested in. And in particular, when I got there, I found that there were people in Afghanistan who, history can't be rewritten. The bombing campaign has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
There were people in Afghanistan who said, "We're glad that you got rid of Al-Qaeda. We're glad that you got rid of the Taliban." And it's possibly true that we could have done it in other ways. You know, I remember thinking back when the bombing campaign started, I wasn't privy to the information that some people might have had,
mm-hmm.
regarding why those decisions were taken. But once that decision was taken, my immediate reaction as far as the bombing campaign was, I just hope that no one innocent gets killed like my daughter.
Daryl Bodley, you lost that daughter, and you've been to Afghanistan. Is that the number one thing you came away with? After all, that most of the bombing was over by that time. What have you come back from that remarkable trip seeing that you didn't see before?
Well, there's utter devastation. And, of course, there's devastation as families' lives as well as homes. As you say, it has to be documented, but it's definitely true. I saw it. Who were victims of the bombing. There's also a huge amount of infrastructure damage and just destruction in huge sections of the city that have to do with the 23 years of war that have gone on there.
And what's the moral lesson you're drawing after this remarkable trip and terrible loss?
Well, the moral lesson, my daughter gave it to us, actually, in a diary page that she wrote before. We don't know when she wrote it. It mm-hmm. was found under her bed after September 11th. And the page says only on it, it says, "People ask who, people ask what, people ask why, people ask where, people ask when, I ask peace." Mm-hmm. And peacefulness in the first place on the part of the people who lived in Afghanistan or the part of the people they were fighting in the many years would have been the solution in the first place. I'm not saying that peace would have been easy to accomplish, and we will never know whether peaceful solutions would have brought about an end to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan.
It sure would have been nice to have it on September 11th. Daryl Bodley, please stand by. We have to take a short break. Listeners, what's your question for these Americans who have seen it all? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is special coverage from WBUR. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Asbrook. We're talking tonight with people who lost family members, loved ones, in the terrorist attacks of September 11th and subsequently decided to travel to Afghanistan to try and reach some insight into the meaning of that loss and the circumstances of the world today. We've been talking with Daryl Bodley, who lost his only child, his daughter Diora, on September 11th, and have begun to hear what he learned on his trip to Afghanistan. You can join the conversation as well. What moral lesson do you hear in the report of these Americans who have paid dearly for terrorism and traveled to its source? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Jack Beatty, we've just begun to hear from our guest tonight, but what a bold decision to step up out of grief and travel to a still dangerous land.
Yeah, I'm so impressed, Mr. Bodley, and my sympathy to you on your terrible, terrible loss. I just have a feeling that you, as you say, you sort of asked yourself what your daughter would have wanted, and you were sort of following in her in what would have been her footsteps. You know, pollsters asked us at the beginning of this how many American casualties we'd be willing to accept in the war. They didn't ask the question, a much more difficult question, how many innocent Afghani civilians would we be willing to accept? And, you know, if the pollsters had specified, well, they're going to be 200 girls, 50 boys, age 1 month to 18, and gone on to sort of characterize, one will be Abdul, he's a kid, he's smiling now. If we bomb Afghanistan, these people will die. What would people have said? Would they have said, no, it's not worth it, some other way must be found? I don't know, but, you know, air power, this is just what goes with air power. Billy Mitchell, the American apostle of air power, he said in the 1930s, it's that air power is a distinct move for the betterment of civilization because wars will be decided quickly and not drag on for years. That may or may not be true about the duration of wars, but the ferocity of wars visited on civilians by air power in this century is just one of the great sort of moral crimes of our time, and one to which, just by living today, we sort of accept this is what war is. You bomb, you win. It's the worst legacy to me, the killing of civilians of the 20th century.
Mr. Bodley, how did people in Afghanistan react when you told them that your daughter had died in the September 11th attacks?
Oh, without reservation, they were all very sorry that it happened. They all mourned the loss with me. The families that we visited all expressed sympathy for my loss, as I did to them for their losses.
Did you visit families who had lost loved ones in Afghanistan? What did you say to each other?
Well, yes, we did. One particular family had lost a 5-year-old daughter, and so we visited that person because he had an analogous situation to mine, although he had other children. Another family we visited literally was not a family anymore. There were three underage or minors left. One was fairly old, and he had a sister and a brother, and they had been out when the house was bombed, and his mother, his grandmother, and two other older parents or adults, members of the family, five people altogether, were killed when a bomb hit the house. It was quite a ways away from any military target. It was definitely an accident, but that accident left him as a underage, somewhat older minor, as the only breadwinner for the house. And you may know that a house without a male breadwinner in it is a disaster in Afghanistan.
You know with a terrible clarity that few of us can fully appreciate how terrible the toll of September 11th was. Do you see the right balance in the U.S. response? I mean, what could the U.S. have done after such a horrible attack that cost so many lives, including your own daughters?
I have to say I don't know, and we don't know. Mm-hmm. For instance, we don't know what kinds of information the people who made the decision to start the bombing had. I'm sure that they are very experienced at the techniques of of bombing. But maybe they are not so experienced at other techniques, and maybe the systems by which those techniques are invoked are not so well developed or even emphasized as much as the military techniques that bombing represents. Again, since we don't have any information, and since there also seems to have been historically a lack of emphasis on the development of skills and focus on alternative techniques, I don't know.
General Bodley, stand by. Listeners, our guests tonight have known suffering on two sides of the world. What do you want to know from them? We're at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined now by Ava Rupp. She is stepsister of Deora Bodley, who died on Flight 93 on September 11th. Good evening and welcome, Ava Rupp.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you've heard some of our conversation.
Yes, I have.
And to you also, we extend our sorrow and full respect for the loss that your family experienced on September 11th. And we'd also like to know from you what your experience of that day was, and tell us about the path that led you from that terrible day to the decision to go to Afghanistan.
Well, my situation is a little different than Daryl's because I live in Washington, D.C., and work for the federal government. Mm-hmm. So during the beginning part of the day, I was just really afraid. I didn't know that Deora was on that plane.
On the day of the attacks?
No.
But you knew Washington was under attack.
Yes, and we were evacuated. And I spent a good hour trying to get home and walking by people with tears streaming down their face. Mm-hmm. Everybody was in shock. Mm-hmm. And I came home and I couldn't use the phone. My parents live in California.
You called them to tell them you were okay. What happened?
Well, I couldn't get through for several hours because the phone lines were down. Mm-hmm. And I finally got through. And at that point, nobody knew that Deora was on that airplane yet. It hadn't been. My mom didn't know yet that there was that possibility. But then when I called back again, she told me there was the possibility that Deora had gone standby. Mm-hmm. So I spent several hours really hoping that she just didn't make it for whatever reason, and my mom was in a state of shock, so I told her that she should really go home to be with Daryl, you know, for when they found out, hopefully good news, and then finally got through to her again in the afternoon, and she told me that the news wasn't what we had hoped.
That Deora was dead?
That she had been on that flight.
What was your first reaction when you found out who was responsible for Deora's death and the attacks on the Pentagon and the World Trade Center?
I think for me, more than the individuals, more than the organization, it was that human beings could, that any group of human beings anywhere, for whatever reason, could get together and plan a group, an attack on civilians without any thought that this was not at all the right thing to do, that they had so much pain and so much hatred inside of them, and that caused them to attack thousands and thousands of people.
What American response did you want then, if you were even in any situation to think about that?
I guess I, along with Daryl, I don't know what I would have done if I would have been the people in that position. Mm-hmm. The people in the Pentagon who are responsible for the military action were under extreme stress at the time. Mm-hmm. I know people who work in the Pentagon, and they were attacked, and psychologically they were under so much stress. And I don't know what I would have done if I would have been in that situation. I would have hoped that there would have been more of a diplomatic discussion for a little bit longer period of time, but I really don't know what information they had and what other options they were discussing and how they made that decision.
You just got back from Afghanistan. Why did you want to go?
Well, I think I also reflected a lot on peace and a lot on the way Deora lived her life. She was a very peaceful person and tried to understand people, tried to help children. And both in honoring that memory and also in trying to promote understanding between people, because I felt like this was such a hateful act. You can only really heal hateful acts with acts of love and acts of understanding.
Amen.
So, amen. We hear you, Daryl Bodley.
Yeah. So I really wanted to go to promote love and understanding between people regardless of their geographic location or their religion.
Ava Rupp, with more than 3,000 dead, there were many thousands of people who lost family members. I think it was just five of you who went on this trip. There was yourself, there was Daryl Bodley. Describe the others and tell us how do you think this group self-selected to make this journey?
Well, the other people, there was a really wonderful lady, Rita, who is 70 years old.
Rita Lazar.
Yes, and she lost her brother, Abe, in the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. He was actually the man who stayed behind with his quadriplegic friend.
Mm. Yeah, we know that story.
And could have gotten out, but wanted to stay with his friend. And Kelly Campbell lost her brother-in-law in the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the four people
just
who had
four.
Lost family members, and also the executive director of the nonprofit.
Were you surprised, disappointed, or did it matter to you at all that it was just four out of maybe, who knows, 30,000?
I think it was a really difficult decision to make. My family was certainly concerned for my safety, and after losing one family member, it's really hard to then say to your family members, I'm going to go and put myself in a situation where I might be in danger.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was. Tell us about your trip. What surprised you the most about your visit to Afghanistan? You were there 4 days, I guess. Share a story or two with us about what you saw and heard.
I guess I have some specific incidents of people that I met. One was the same woman Daryl was mentioning who lost her five-year-old child who, with tears streaming down her face, holding the picture of her child, said, I lost my child, but I'm so glad that the Taliban is gone. I'm so glad that the U.S. did something to get rid of them.
Lord, what an image. What do you... I don't know what to take away from that. She lost the child, but she's glad the Taliban's gone. The bombs drove out the Taliban.
Yeah.
We don't know. The problem is we don't have a choice of knowing whether anything else would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it just illustrates how much people had been forgotten in Afghanistan and how the system of oppression had been in place for so long and war had been in place for so long, and the desperation of this woman at just wanting peace. She didn't overlook the death of her daughter, but she was just so grateful for peace.
Mm. Ava Rupp and Daryl Bodley, we have callers who want to join the conversation. Do you mind if we bring in some questions from people who are hearing your story?
That's fine.
Yeah.
Great. Frank is on the line. Welcome, Frank. You're on the air.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question for Daryl Bodley. First of all, my sincerest condolences. And my question was, you had alluded earlier to a peaceful means to an end. And what evidence, if any, did you see or could you provide for us that suggested that a peaceful means to an end actually could have been achieved?
Well,
that's exactly the question, I guess, would be on many minds. Daryl Bodley, how about it?
Well, as I said, I don't have any evidence in particular because, for one thing, the flow of information from people who might have knowledge of possible other solutions is been even more restricted in the recent past than before, and I'm speaking about government information.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, verifying it and getting reliable sources and all that make it extremely different.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't have any evidence. I also don't know of any particular information that tells us that we are actually skilled at doing any of those other things besides bombing.
Such as what?
Well, the word I used, it was a kind of a play on words, was intelligence. In other words, how to be smart about negotiating a peaceful solution, and also intelligence in the sense of actually knowing the information that you need to know in order to make intelligent decisions.
When you say negotiating peaceful solution, are you suggesting that we might have done something with no violence attached to it that would have set the situation right there?
Well, no. I think I'm probably speaking about covert operations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That would go directly at the terrorists without subjecting the civilians to danger.
Yeah.
Ava Rupp, what about you in response to Frank's question? And Frank, thank you for your call. Do you see another way that might have been followed? What would it have been?
I think at the time that all of this happened, there was just such a system in place in Afghanistan, so many years of neglect and so many years of people being so oppressed and the Taliban actually living, you know, amongst everybody, it would have been very difficult to get them physically out without some sort of means of violence. But, I really don't have a good answer for that. I would have liked to have thought that pressure from the international community, more diplomatic efforts could have at least helped the process along a little bit. But I don't know that that would have worked either.
You know, Eva Rupp, I think given the loss that you and Daryl experienced on 9/11, Americans probably hang on your words, wanting some kind of reassurance that the American response was moral and right. Would you classify it that way?
I'm not sure how I would classify it, but as far as our actions go, I think what we are trying to do by bringing light to these people's stories is try to create something that's moral and right and trying to end some of this human suffering that we've seen. I mean, we're suffering, mm-hmm. and the American community has been very supportive. But I think that also the Afghan people are suffering so much with the poverty and the oppression that they've suffered under, and particularly the bombing victims who have suffered under the Taliban and then suffered as a result of mistakes. They weren't intentional, but misdirected bombs. And you can do the moral and the right thing by trying to extend as much help as possible to help them rebuild their lives.
There's an equivalent morality, I might say, in terms of extending this help. The U.S. government has formulated a plan by which it would assist the victims of 9/11. It's called the interim rule at this point, mm-hmm. but much more quickly than that, and much with a huge amount of force, which was just beautiful to see, was the American people's response in terms of humanitarian aid, the Red Cross and other organizations, mm-hmm. Firemen's boots campaigns, and.
Do you mean in the United States or for the Afghan people?
No, in the United States for the United States victims.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've seen up to this point is a moderate response on the terms of the U.S. government,
mm-hmm.
probably not large enough in terms of the Tokyo Convention that just ended.
Mm-hmm.
And we should have, or we are interested in hoping to raise the awareness of the American people, so there might be some sort of movement on their part generated on a people-to-people basis to provide some relief for the people of Afghanistan, similar to the generous relief that we, the victims of American tragedy on 9/11, have received.
Daryl Bodley, Eva Rupp, please stand by. Daryl Bodley lost a daughter on September 11th, Eva Rupp, a stepsister, Diora. They both are just back from a visit to Afghanistan, trying to make sense of everything that's happened on 9/11 and since in their own minds. You can join us with your questions for them at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage from WBUR Boston. This is Special Coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight with Americans who lost close relatives on September 11th and who have just returned from Afghanistan, where they went on a personal pilgrimage to try and figure out if the right thing has been done, if the right thing could be done. What do you hear in the witness of these pilgrims to grief and to Afghanistan? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Gary is on the line. Welcome, Gary. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's such a difficult topic you're on here. It
sure is.
It's good to hear that there's some people who are bold enough to go out and then seek the root of all this, even mm-hmm. though they've been directly affected by something so painful.
It is heartening, isn't it?
It is. It is. But my question was partially answered by some of the last discussion before the break. But I think there's a general sense in people like myself who have heard so much about the conditions that were there in Afghanistan for their people for the past 10 or so years, I guess, since the Taliban took over. And I think the main question is, and with those of you who have been to Afghanistan, did you get the sense from the people in Afghanistan that they felt that perhaps more lives were actually being saved on down the road than might be lost by a quick and decisive bombing campaign?
Gary, thank you for your call. Daryl Bodley, what about it? Did you get the sense overall that Afghans felt that the American intervention has led to a long-term good there?
Just from the words of the people that we actually met, which, I mean, admittedly, we only stayed there for just a few days, but
right.
Almost to a person, the people who expressed opinions, their opinion really had to do with the cessation of violence. They were so many times. We even heard from a former fighter who fought against the Russians. He said, "We're tired." So it was. I don't think it was ever expressed in terms of saving more lives,
mm-hmm.
but it was expressed in terms of the violence is over,
mm-hmm.
and that I think is that was the thing they were happy, so to speak, happy about at that point.
Jack Beatty, there is a bit of an irony here, isn't there? None of the terrorists on 9/11 were Afghans, but yet there's no other place to go exactly to try and connect with the taproot here.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, these are from Saudi Arabia. We didn't attack Saudi Arabia. I think Daryl said something really that made me think, and I don't have an answer to it, but when he said that, you know, we sort of bake in the cake bombing. That's what we do. That's what we do when we're threatened. We do it in Kosovo. We did it in Iraq. And we know that when you bomb people, innocent people die, and we all kind of accept that.
There's never been a perfect bombing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And there can't be.
They're right.
And those of us who want a better way have got to find a way. And I think so many of us felt it after September 11th. The government was saying, "What's your alternative?" And none of us, or at least I certainly had, nothing to say. Something pathetic about, mm-hmm. well, you can bribe, you can spy, you can use commandos, you can, you know, you can treat it as a violation of law, not an act of war, and therefore pursue it through, you know, trying to arrest people clandestinely through bribe. It was pathetic that we had no. We're all so baked in the cake of bombing and mass death that we can't think of alternatives, and that's a challenge that Daryl, I think, confronts us all with, to think of alternatives.
It sure does. Nicholas is on the line. Welcome, Nicholas. You're on the air.
Yeah, great discussion here, and my heart goes out to these people. It really does. I cried, even though no one I personally knew, but it was devastating to me what happened to them. Sure, these people. And a direct comment to what Ava said about the only way to heal through violence, I think, is through forgiveness and love. I think that is true, but I only think that's half the equation. I think in terms of the past, that's the only way to survive this is to try to understand and through love.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are times when a violence or an angry response, not an anger, a self-defensive response is required.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of in high school, I'm a little guy, I'm 5'5", and I used to try to negotiate as much as possible and run away in many situations and many other times show love and respect. But there were times where you just had to fight. And I think that's sometimes, even though people would like to think that, you know, that you can talk your way out of every situation, that you can show love in every situation, sometimes it's just enough, and sometimes you have to go back. You have to bomb, or you have to.
Nicholas, I am sure that you speak for so many of us when you express that set of emotions. Ava Rupp, what about it? I mean, with the loss you've taken, with the trip you've made, you do stand as a kind of moral voice we want to listen to. Do you understand Nicholas's sentiment there that there are some times you just have to hit back, or did the suffering you saw in Afghanistan make you think it's just not right?
I guess I'm. That's a really difficult question for me, because for me, I just feel like we're passing the torch of violence on to another group of people, and more hate just creates more hate. And
but what about the anger? Ava Rupp, Nicholas mentioned it. You must have felt it. Where has your anger gone since September 11th?
I think I don't know that I felt angry in a sense of wanting to get back. I just felt incredibly sad and heartbroken that human beings have come to this point where we would just consider life as something that you can just, a civilian life, as something that is so worthless that you could actually sit down in a room, I'm talking about the terrorists, and plan an attack on civilians, and no one would raise the question of, is this the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Daryl, do you have a good answer for that?
A couple of things. And one is that, first of all, I guess I would have to say that there's a possibility that this method of bombing might have been taken as a tactic of suppression. In other words, there might have been some information that further acts of terrorism were going to be committed if the groups that had caused it were enabled to move freely.
Mm-hmm. If it wasn't suppressed or disrupted.
Well, if their day-to-day activities were not suppressed and mm-hmm. slowed down and prevented.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that's one reason why the bombing was so fierce.
Well, that's what everyone feared. It seemed that it could go on and on. And how many blows like that can any country, even a superpower, take? Not even one responsibly, could it?
Yeah, no, we didn't. I mean, we had those planes were literally bombs.
Mm-hmm.
And they dropped on New York and Washington.
And your daughter was on the third.
Yeah, she was in the one in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know where that one was headed.
Daryl Bodley, where was your daughter Dura headed on September? What was she coming east for?
Well, she was actually...
Or as west, I guess.
Yeah, she was leaving from Newark mm-hmm. to come back to San Francisco to get ready for school.
Mm-hmm.
Her boyfriend was going to pick her up and,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing.
Jay is on the line. Welcome, Jay. You're on the air.
Good evening, Tom.
Good evening.
Often from the American media, I hear some misunderstanding. And also, like, these fine people went to Afghanistan to really understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we have done more for Afghanistan, September 11 wouldn't have happened. But nobody ever mentioned none of these crimes in America committed by anybody from Afghanistan. None. They were all Arabs. And have nothing to do with Afghani people at all.
Jay, we've made the point here tonight, but Daryl Bodley, what about that?
The breeding ground for the terrorist camps, as I understand it, was the accession to power of the Taliban. The Taliban tolerated and probably needed the Al-Qaeda as a support.
So we understand that, Daryl Bodley. At the same time, Jay, we understand your point that the impetus for this anger came out of a much broader area, much of it not in Afghanistan at all.
Yeah.
But, Jay, what does that say to you? You see two Americans like Daryl and Ava with the loss that they suffered of a daughter, of a stepsister, they want to reach out to somewhere to investigate and to open their hearts to share. Where would it be geographically, Jay?
But absolutely. I mean, I agree with them to just find a way to grieve. That's true. I agree with you. But however, average Afghani really didn't know what's going on in the country. And some of these people came, you know, Al-Qaeda people with a ton of money and involved with the Taliban. Mm-hmm. Average Afghani doesn't know anything about it.
Jay, what's your home country?
I was born in Iran.
If Daryl and Ava went back to the Middle East, where would you suggest they go to find the source of this tragedy?
Well, since some of these people, for one thing, majority of the people come from Saudi Arabia, they should go to Saudi Arabia and find some of those madrasas. And they should also go to Pakistan, try to find some of those religious nuts who are teaching these things. You know, Pakistan is full of it. And also they find it, obviously, a ton of money from Saudi Arabia. These are the people who should be...
Jay, our time is running down, but we take your point. We thank you for your call. Daryl Bodley, we just have a minute left, but give us the thought you want to leave America with.
Well, I think that we would have possibly avoided September 11th if we hadn't been pursuing the course of normal that we had been pursuing, which included a lack of awareness of the... our position in the world and the position in vis-a-vis the living conditions, the
mm-hmm.
religious convictions, the various ways of thinking in the world that everyone else, we just are so insulated that we don't have any sense of of respect and love for other individuals. And
need
and
more awareness there.
Equitable sharing. Mm.
And Ava Rupp, we've just got 30 seconds. I'm sorry, but your thought for us.
I guess my thought would be just not to forget countries that are as desperate as Afghanistan is. Mm.
Ava, I'm sorry, but that's our time. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And Daryl Bodley, thank you very much for sharing so candidly with us tonight.
Thank you.
Daryl Bodley's daughter, Diora, was killed on United Flight 93, which crashed in a field near Pittsburgh. Diora was Ava Rupp's stepsister. They both recently returned from a visit to Afghanistan. Jack, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
We end this hour with music from tonight's guest, Daryl Bodley. He wrote this song on September 13th, just 2 days after his daughter, Diora, died in the crash near Pittsburgh. He says, "The song just came through me, not from me. When I finished playing it that night, I felt as if my daughter was telling me, 'Don't worry, Dad, it's all right. Just do the right thing.'" Music from tonight's guest, Daryl Bodley. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is special coverage from WBUR, Boston.